I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
My head hurts. Like a hangover. My body wants to keep sleeping, but my mind, it wants, needs to wake. I groan, hearing a creaking sound, and I register by the cushioned surface beneath me that I am in some sort of bed. It's dark and my eyes can't quite make out the shapes around me. Everything is too unfamiliar. I try to recall the events prior to waking here. Where was I? I came to meet my mother, get in her good graces, evade the consequences of my actions, and perhaps reinvent myself. More like become the person I was supposed to be. We were at the table in the kitchen, I remember. I started to feel unwell. I thought maybe it was the adrenaline of the past few days wearing off after finally feeling like I could take a breath. Sometimes that would happen. There were times after losing a particularly important hand in a card game where I'd start to feel dizzy. I'd excuse myself to the bathroom and vomit, purge myself of the disgust. But it was always balanced out by the unadulterated thrill and joy of a win. That was the only feeling that would make that sickness go away. As my senses sharpen and my eyes adjust, I try to sit up, but I am stopped almost instantly. Loud clunks. The more I move, the louder and more frequent they become. I run my hands up and down where there is some freedom of movement. Focus my eyes and see what I am attached to by restraints. Bars. I'm surrounded by them. Is this a jail cell? I pull harder, but all it does is hurt my wrists. My legs are free. I stand and I rock back and forth. The floor is soft. Is it a floor? What is this thing? I thought this was a bed, but now that doesn't make sense. My head is swimming and I feel nauseated and dizzy. The clanging of the chains on the bars echoes painfully in my head.
It's baby time,
I hear in the distance. What? Hello? Hello? Who's there? A match strike precedes a flame that illuminates the room with a flash. A woman stands there, her back facing away from me. She's long and lean in a white nightgown made translucent by the candlelight. Her dark hair is pinned up. The glow of the flame casts against the wall in front of her, and its soft glow frames her entirety in a golden halo. What the fuck is going on? Who are you? I ask. She pulls a pin out of her hair and it unfurls along her back. It's much longer than I would have guessed. She turns and the shock sends me flying back, but my restraints catch me. Oh, my precious boy, you must be so hungry. I don't understand. It's her, a version of her. The hunched, old, frail lady who greeted me earlier today. Except she's different. She stands taller and her movements are more fluid. She's steadier on her feet. She's, of course, old enough to be my mom, but it's as if she's a younger version of that woman. The age I would have expected my mother to be. What the fuck is going on? I yell. As the adrenaline kicks in and my mind becomes clearer, I look down and see I am shirtless. No pants either, but there's underwear. No, not underwear, it's thicker and there's a pin. No, this can't be. A diaper? I look down at my bare feet, sunken into the padded surface, and realize maybe my hunch was right that this is a mattress. Maybe. My eyes work up to the bars, the leather restraints on my wrist chained to each one, rows of bars surrounding me on all sides, except this isn't a cell because there is no ceiling. It takes me a second to understand what this thing is because the scale is unlike anything I have ever seen. It's a massive crib. Big enough to hold a man of my size. I start to realize this is some sort of nightmare, triggered by the stress and the events of the past few weeks. I shut my eyes and tell myself to wake up. Now, my baby boy, don't make a fuss. It's going to be all right. What the fuck is this? What are you doing? I shout as she steps close to the crib. I don't like this. Let me out of here. Don't be naughty, my little baby. She's unmoved by my reaction. It's as if she's not seeing me, the man who walked through the door. I'm not your fucking baby. She tilts her head, a gesture of pity or sympathy. Of course you are, and you always will be. You're fucking sick. This is a kidnapping. Do you understand? People will be looking for me. They'll find me. My little baby boo. This is our secret, just like we had discussed earlier. If there is anything that is unshakable, it is the bond between mother and son. You came here looking for something. You left something behind. I could see it in your eyes. You are troubled. You never had a mother's unconditional love. You're not my mother. You're a fucking stranger. You're sick, okay? We can get you help. She sits down on a rocking chair in the corner of the room, places a hand on her stomach and looks down. I grew you in my womb for 9 months. My blood ran through you, fed you. You can go to the other side of the world, but I am your mother. I am in every cell in your body. At this point, I don't care about the ruse. I just want out. I'll figure out the rest once I'm free. So I confess. I committed a crime. The police will be looking for me. She smiles. It's not cruel. It's more like she's comforted by a thought. Your car is in the ocean, driven off of a bluff. Your birth required your death. I set you free. I think about all the documents, the money, all the important things in that car. It's all too much. It's all too fast. I don't know what to do. I don't have any recourse. I start screaming, crying, kicking, desperately trying to break the bars of the crib. You'll tire yourself out. She stands up and she opens a drawer. I hear her putting something together in the shadows. It just makes me act out even bigger, louder. Eventually, she sits back in her chair and rocks, quietly, without a word, until she has proven herself right. I'm spent, exhausted, and understand this is fruitless. Wherever I am, no one other than she can hear me. You must be so tired and hungry, she says. She's right. I'm starving, and I have to piss, but I won't do it in this fucking diaper. I don't reply. Instead, I sit there, panting, my face wet with spittle and tears. Something is loosely tied around my neck. I didn't even notice it before the haze of drugs and panic. I follow the strings to something hanging along the side of my left shoulder. A bonnet. She goes back into the shadows and I see the shape of her twisting. Then there's squelching, rubber sounds. You'll feel much better once you've had something to eat. It's time for your feeding, she says as she turns and steps into the light. The top of her dress is pulled down to her waist and on her chest are these rubber tits. My eyes follow a suction sound to her hand, a pump of sorts. As she squeezes it, little white droplets drip from the engorged nipples. Oh no, what the fuck are you doing? I pull back as my restraints allow. There's plenty of milk here for a growing boy. You'll feel so much better. There's no fucking way, you crazy bitch. I'd rather starve. Still, my words do not deter her. She steps on a stool so that her bosom reaches over the crib bars. Now, now, I won't tolerate you calling your mother those words. Drinky, drinky, my beautiful boy. She reaches for my head and pulls it close. I resist, but I am weak, spent from all the screaming and from the drugs still dulling my system. She's stronger than I expected, and using both of her arms, we battle a reverse tug of war, her pulling my head towards her rubber bosom and me pulling back. Her face forms into a grimace as she pulls, her forearms revealing sinew. This is not a frail woman. The transformation is staggering. It's not just a costume. Her whole essence has changed from somewhere deep. In a flash, she pushes her body towards my face to make up for the distance and smashes it into a breast. The pressure forces milk to squirt out all over me. Out of sheer animal instinct, I sink my teeth into the rubber and bite hard, ripping apart the artificial flesh. She pulls away, gasping in shock. Look what you've done, bad boy. She steps down. One of the breasts is torn in half, hanging off of her chest, revealing the clear plastic milk storage bags underneath. I figured your teething might be an issue, so I've plenty more where this came from. But I can't trust those chompers, so you leave me no other choice. She marches over to the shadows and rips open a drawer. I hear instruments moving about, and a streak of terror runs through me. Before, I was panicked, feeling a sense of being trapped, but I didn't feel like she might hurt me. Now I realize there is no guarantee this crazy woman wouldn't inflict pain on me. She returns with something clasped in her hand. She's back on the stool, and my attempts at dodging are fruitless as she slams down on my shoulder. I see it then, a glass syringe, the reusable, old-school types. I have no idea what she's putting in my body. What is that? Until you learn to behave, you will have to take this medicine to calm your nerves. It's okay. It's all natural. Please, I beg as she pulls the empty syringe away from my shoulder. The plunger is all the way down. It's too late. For a while, I only remember flashes of things. Her stripping the sheets, the feeling of a warm, wet sponge against my body, her gentle humming from above as she's inside the crib with me and I'm in her arms, rocking. It feels like a dream, a state between nonsense and reality with no clear boundaries. The drugs she injects take away the panic. I know this isn't right. I know I don't want this, but I can't stir up any fight. I just lie there, flaccid. I don't know how long this goes on, but at some point, she decides to let me come back. I wake up feeling more like myself, though still in a fog. I start to sense a desire, a stirring in me that wasn't there before. Conscious thoughts, though shapeless as they may be, begin to take shape. I am awakening. I am trapped here. I need to get out. I can't get out if she keeps injecting me with this stuff. She'll keep injecting me with this stuff if I fight. That's about as many cogent thoughts as I can string together, but it's enough to work with. I keep still, hoping she can't see I'm awake. I move only my eyeball, scanning as much of my surroundings as I can. But there's only a single candle lighting the room, leaving all kinds of dark corners. It doesn't look like it's part of her cottage. Maybe I'm in the big house, the one that was boarded up. There are no windows. I have no idea what time of day it is. It's clear to me after some observation that I'm alone. I sit up and then stand on wobbly feet. I immediately realize two things. One, I am starving. And two, I really have to take a shit. The room is sparsely decorated from what I can see, but it's definitely a nod to a nursery, a primitive one, except for the baby monitor. There's the crib I'm in, of course, the rocking chair, the dresser where she keeps God knows what, a sheepskin rug on the floor. Other than the crib, they all look like antiques. Perhaps they were hers or even from my grandfather when he was an infant. I look down at my feet. Little blue hippos. That's what's on the sheet covering my mattress. I want to think of a plan, a way to get out of here, but my bodily needs are demanding attention. My stomach contracts. I whimper as I bend over it in discomfort.
I don't want to shit in a diaper,
I mutter to myself.
It's baby time.
Her voice echoes into the room. I frantically look around for her. I recall I have heard her say it before. In the foggy memories of my dreamlike state, I know it means she's coming. The panic I was numb to while sedated, the kind I felt when I first woke up in this room, returns. I want to scream, cry, curse, but then I remind myself. I am trapped here. I need to get out. I can't get out if she keeps injecting me. She'll keep injecting me if I fight. I take a few deep breaths, try to calm my nerves. As soon as she comes closer to the room, the candlelight casts a gargantuan shadow of her against a wall, probably the size she would be in relation to me if I were an infant. She finally comes into view, her long, dark hair braided to one side. It reminds me of Jolie's hair that first night I spotted her from across the room. My stomach bubbles and rumbles. I need to take a shit, I say. She smiles. Of course you do. The medicine you were taking stopped you up. You haven't gone since you got here, but I gave you a little something to move things along. My bowels become more urgent.
Okay, so can you just walk me to the bathroom? I promise I won't fight.
Oh, you silly baby. You aren't potty trained yet. You can go right now or whenever the urge strikes. I'll clean you right up. That's what mommy is here for. I take a few harsh breaths, holding in the rage and fighting the strain to keep from shitting myself. For the first time, I think before I speak. I try to relate to her on some twisted level. I am potty trained. I can use the potty myself. I'm a big boy, I promise. She wags her finger. You peed in your diaper several times, so I highly doubt that. My stomach gurgles audibly. Cold sweat pours from my brow. My stomach feels like a writhing snake. I haven't felt like this since I had those bad clams in 77. I grip the bars and grip my teeth, willing the shit to stay inside. But I can't fight this.
You look pale, sweetie.
When my son Hans was a toddler, just after he learned to walk, and before he was potty trained, he used to be embarrassed about going in his diaper. We never shamed him. It was as if he knew innately that this should be a private thing. It was cute how he'd make a little surprise face, find a corner, and then strain, as if we all didn't know he was going in his diaper. I'd laugh at him as I watched, at his poopy face, I called it. I try to find a private corner in my crib, but there's nowhere to hide from her violating gaze in this crib with 360-degree views of me. I turn away from her and lose the battle to the laxatives. There's a mix of immense relief and shame as my bowels erupt, the stench and sounds filling the air almost immediately. And then once it's free, I can't help but push. The hot sludge presses against my diaper. The mushy, warm wetness engulfs my rear. The urine comes too, and it's all too much for one diaper. I feel the semi-liquid shit spread to the front, all over my dick and balls, and then hot, thick, wet, trailing down my leg.
Oh boy, that's a stinky poopy, she says, pinching her nose.
Is this how he felt? When I laughed at Hans? I wonder. The humiliation is ripe as the smell of my shit in the air. Though it hasn't peaked because what is to come next pales in comparison.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
She rummages through one of the drawers and slides on a pair of gloves.
Time to change your poopy diaper. This might be my chance to escape. But then she pulls out two more restraints. You don't need to do that. Baby, it's for your own good. Now you either sit in that diaper and get a nasty rash, or you let me change you. I've seen diaper rash, and I can't afford to have that on top of everything going on. The smell is unbearable. It's a sick shit, a stress type of shit. A shit of someone who has been on the run and then drugged and then constipated for days. I accept defeat silently. Sitting in shit will only make me suffer. She first warns me that she doesn't keep the key for the arm restraints on her, and the crib is reinforced, so I'll never make it out of the room if I hurt her. She says it gently, like she's telling me for my own good, because the last thing she wants is for me to starve to death here. I lie on my back as she restrains one leg, then the other, tight enough that I can't move them to hurt her, but loose enough to work around them. Bend your knees a little. Yes, like that. Good baby, she says. I close my eyes as she unpins the diaper. What a load! I can't help but open them again in time to catch her fanning at the stench. She collects the ends of the diaper to contain as much crap as possible, but still it spills out the edges as she moves it away. Then she wipes and wipes. And wipes. Every crevice, every inch that diaper covered, smearing the liquid shit all over my groin and ass, going through several fresh rags. She acts just like a good mother would, completely detached from the fact that these are sexual organs. Just a mom making sure her baby is fresh. So I take on the role. I do the thing baby boys do. A little baby-style spite, if you will. If she wants baby time, she'll get baby time. Push. A golden stream shoots up in the air, its arc landing in her hair and on her face. Is that long black hair or a wig? Or was the gray hair the wig? Unlike a 10-pound baby boy, this bladder can pack a whole lot more. She jumps up out of the way, scrunching her face. I wonder if this was a mistake. Will this enrage her? She looks at me sideways and huffs, wagging her finger, stifling a laugh. You're a very naughty baby. I should have known better. Better wear my beekeeper suit next time. I lie there as she takes the heavy, loaded diaper and filthy rags and dumps them into a pail. They land with an embarrassingly heavy thud. You pee-peed all over the sheets, she mutters, more to herself than me before marching away. I assume to get more cleaning supplies, and leaves me there, ass out in the drafty room. I try to think of ways to get out, but it's too risky. I need a plan. She manages quite deftly to change the sheets under me, like how the nurses did when Jolie's father had a stroke. I'm amazed at how different she is from the woman who greeted me at the door. Was that an act? Is this an act? I don't ask. It's clear to me now that she's in some sort of delusion, and I have to be careful with how I approach her. When I used to work, I was good at sales. Being a good salesman is about listening. I simply have to bear this for a while. I have to listen and learn. With the most urgent physical need addressed, the next most important one screams for attention. Hunger. It's a gnawing, aching one. The kind that makes my muscles feel weak and my thoughts unclear, though it's hard to know what's from the drugs at this point. As I lie there, I observe my naked body. I've already lost a noticeable amount of weight. I can see it in my legs, which are well-toned from regular racquetball and tennis games. As she wraps up her cleaning, my stomach lets out a lion's growl loud enough to fill the room. She stops her movements and grins, pleased to be of service. baby's hungry, huh? I don't answer. But I am. I'm starving. The kind of hunger that reminds you that for all of life's trappings, that you are an animal. I run my tongue along my lips and they feel like the craggy surface of a rock face. My saliva cakes together like clay. She walks over to the crib. It has been 5 days and who knows how long before you arrived here since you've eaten or had anything to drink besides some ice chips I'd melt and place in your mouth. They call this failure to thrive and I'm very concerned. You'll die if you keep this up. She's right. I can't make it out of here if I starve to death. And I'll be honest with you and myself. I don't have the discipline. I can't bring myself to ask, though. She must see it in my eyes. She squints and shakes her head side to side the way you would at a dog or a baby and boops my nose.
You hungry, baby?
She asks.
Yes, you are.
I don't play along, goo goo gaga, or whatever the hell a baby is expected to do. But I nod. Barely. Well, okay then, she says, like it's a favor to me. But I can tell by the spark that lights up in her eyes that this is all for her. She leaves and returns holding something or some things. I can't see what. She goes over to the shadowy area and produces the same mixture of sounds. Fluid pouring, rubber squelching. She turns and presents the same massive breasts as before. Two shiny milk drops at the end of each nipple, like a serum at the end of a needle. This will help you become a big, strong boy. She plops the leaking milk sacks over the crib railing. I am so thirsty. So hungry. I feel a mix of yearning and disgust at the dripping, glistening milk.
Go on. Latch, baby.
I don't want to, but I need to. Slowly, I crane my neck forward, sticking my tongue out like a child forced to taste a new food they don't trust. Whenever I look up at her, she's smiling, the shadows casting in the creases of her smile and underneath her eyes, wide with anticipation. The whites of her eyes and teeth glow in contrast. There's something unsettling about her expression. And then I recall listening to the radio on the way up. There were areas that didn't have great reception. And at times, talk radio was the only thing that came through clear. Some body language expert, or maybe it was a psychologist, I can't recall. He said something about how humans tend not to show the whites of their eyes above or below the iris. That when someone stares like that, it triggers something instinctual. It informs us this person is a threat. She nods eagerly to encourage me. I get close enough for the tip of my tongue to make contact but stop short. It's a brief standoff, the sparkling droplet flickering with the candlelight. And me staring at this artificial rubber nipple, this grotesque, debased pantomime of motherhood. And yet she has managed to recreate the relationship in its basest way. I am completely dependent on her for my survival. My pleas for help are solely up for her interpretation, like an infant's cry. And in the purest biological sense, I am her son, and she is mommy. I succumb to what must be done. I close the gap and collect a single drop, hearing myself whimper in disgust. That sounds like a baby's cry more than that of a grown man. I barely taste the thing as it dissolves on my tongue, but it's enough to determine that there's no repellent smell or taste. Hesitantly, but a little less so, I purse my lips around the bouncy rubber and suck just enough to take in a true taste test, grimacing and whimpering in disgust all the while. It's not easy work, only a little less strenuous than sucking in a too thick milkshake through a straw. To my surprise, it's not bad. It tastes like milk, but sweeter and thicker. Something like an Ensure. There is a mild, bitter aftertaste and even a little earthiness too, but I'm in no position to be picky. I had to drink those shakes after an oral surgery that required my mouth to be wired shut. I assume milk alone wouldn't suffice for a grown man, and she knew that. In some sick way, she cares. The promise of nutrition takes my persistent weakening hunger and mutates it into an energetic, ravenous frenzy. I can't get this stuff inside of me fast enough. Before I know it, I'm sucking hard, squeezing the bouncy fake flesh to strengthen the stream of this mother's milk. "Easy there," she says over a giggle. "No teeth." A current of sickness undercuts the primal pleasure of filling an empty belly, but it doesn't slow me down. I twist my head trying to find better angles and to relieve my tired neck and jaw. I don't stop until she, really the breast containers, are sucked dry. As I pull away, a wave of relaxation runs through my body, like a warm river flowing in my veins. Maybe it's from the lack of oxygen from sucking so hard, or the endorphins from finally receiving hydration and nourishment, but I can barely keep my eyes open long enough to reflect on what just happened. I slump back down into my crib. I feel like I'm floating, like I'm resting in a cloud, and it's carrying me away. My mother wipes a warm, wet washcloth along my mouth and neck, cleaning up the drippings. I try to fight at the euphoric spell that has taken hold of me, but the outline of everything softens, like a dream. The warm shapes of undulating candlelight lull me deeper into a trance. She pulls a blanket up to my neck and tucks me in. It feels cozy. Tender. It reminds me of Christmas, the only time I remember enjoying my second family. We'd all go into the woods and chop a big tree and decorate it together. I'd fall asleep on the couch every night, entranced by the twinkling lights until the tree was gone. I try to lift my arms because something about this feels unnatural. I'm too relaxed. I feel too good, too blissful, but they each feel like they've quadrupled in weight and I can barely raise them. She gently pushes them back down anyway. "You're milk drunk, my baby boy," she says quietly as the cloud sweeps me away. There is no time here in my nursery. I can only guess how long it has been since my first feeding. Maybe weeks. Months. Since there are no windows, I can only know the cycles of the day based on the routine Mommy has set for me. I am her baby. Daily, she bathes me, changes my diapers, feeds me from her bosom. She no longer even has to restrain me. You may be wondering why I have settled into this life so quickly. The answer is rather simple. She doesn't need to shackle me. She has found another way. It only took 3 or so feedings for me to confirm the pattern. After each feeding, that warm wave of peace and euphoria would overtake me. Not too long after that, around mealtimes, I would start to crave her milk. As I waited, I would start to feel agitated and sickly. Sometimes I would break out in a cold sweat. Sometimes if she ran late, my bones ached. I sort of became like a pet dog. You know how their internal clock is so on the nose? If you're even a minute late with dinner, they'll let you know. I was once a father. I've seen babies get milk drunk, as she put it, but not at every meal, not every time. I started to piece it together. The way she comes downstairs holding something in her hand, the sounds of mixture, her garden where she sourced the tea that knocked me out. I think she's putting something in the milk, making me hopelessly addicted to it. It wasn't enough to make me reliant via hunger. She had to knock out the rational part of my brain, the part that plans for a future outside of this nursery. She had to make me into someone content to lie in bed all day, waiting for my next meal. But of course, she couldn't turn me into an actual infant, so she had to turn me into an addict. I no longer recoil in disgust at the thought of her milk. All I think about is my next visit from those rubber tits. It's my only source of pleasure during these empty days. Of course, the fleeting thought of escaping still pops up now and then, usually once my feeding has worn off and before the longing kicks in. But then I think, what the fuck will I do when I get out of here? I can't go to the cops. I'm a fugitive. My money is gone, and then there's this new addiction, opium or some form of it, I think. I don't know much about Poppy. I was never much of a horticulturalist. But she has a greenhouse and a garden and a green thumb she has been cultivating out here since her youth. I won't make it a day outside of this nursery without a fix. So my escape must include a way to flip the roles. I can't just run. I must capture her so I can force her to give me her stash and access to her money. It's a delicate and scary balance, and even then, there's no guarantee that will succeed in the long term. I fear the longer I stay here, the more content I will be to sleep the day away, my muscles and willpower wasting away, waiting for the next hit. I am much lighter now than when I arrived. My muscles have atrophied. She feeds me just enough to keep me alive. When it's time for my feeding, she lowers the bars on one side of the crib and she guides me on my unsteady legs. My knees are now two large nubs that are thicker than my thighs, to the rocking chair by the candle. She sits on it, pulls her pseudo breasts out and over the collar of her nightgown, and softly pats her thigh with a smile. I climb onto her lap, tucking myself into a tight ball as she cradles me, one of her hands gently tapping the outside of my hip, the chair swaying back and forth as I suckle. Sometimes mommy tells me about her life as she holds me in her lap. I coo and play with her hair. She gives me more milk if I play along. Here are the things I have learned, the things she has whispered in a soothing low tone in my ear, like a lullaby. That my father was a secret, how she could never utter who he was to anyone, not even her mother. She thinks more than anything that is why I was taken from her.
You look just like him.
You look just like him.
You look just like your grandfather.
Just like your grandfather.
How this nursery is in the big house, but this is not the family estate. I would have known that had I lifted the overgrowth from the sign the day I arrived here. The home for wayward girls, that's where I was born. It was shuttered and she bought it for a steal, including its contents. That's how she got the records. She decided to stay here. I don't understand why. She hasn't explained that yet. She may never. But she says she doesn't like going back to her childhood home. And now she says this is perfect. It's like I was never snatched away when she gave birth to me. Instead, they placed me in her arms and she nursed me and we never lost each other. Sometimes I think about my kids, my wife, how I was always wanting more. Did I ever want them as much as my mother wanted me? As much as deep down inside I wanted her? Was that all this was? All along? Sometimes I see their faces, the look in their eyes. Wide, hollow, vacant, and yet devastated. Jolie's wild gaze as gray, soulless, and turbulent as a stormy sea when I straddled her on the bed the night she found out about all the money I had lost. She was too drunk to even hear me when I came in, but she awoke when I squeezed my fingers around her neck until her flailing arms dropped at her sides and the dim bedroom went still. Britta's eyes, as I waited for her to arrive home from school for the break, told her her mom had stepped out, made her a snack to eat in the kitchen island, and left, returning with a pistol. I came from behind on purpose. She wasn't supposed to know it was coming. She was supposed to enjoy her last moments and never realize that her charmed life had already started to fall apart. Then she turned at the last minute, saw the barrel of the gun, registered what was about to happen maybe a millisecond before I had her join her mother. And my son, my beautiful boy. He arrived late that night. I told him his mother and sister were already sleeping. They both seemed to have caught some bug that had been going around. I turned on a movie for us, made popcorn, and we enjoyed some final moments together. But I couldn't keep him in the living room for long. He insisted on getting something himself from the kitchen. I followed behind at a distance as he came upon Britta. This time, I was faster. He didn't see it coming, but the look on his face, the horror and realization of what he had come upon, it was already there, frozen in time. You wouldn't understand it, not unless you are of a certain pedigree. But I did what I did out of love. My kids, Jolie, they knew no other life but one of unthinkable privilege. They did not understand lack. They did not know anything other than being the best and having the best. When it would all come out, the whispers would come, the judgments. They would never regain the status they were born with. The stain would be permanent. I just wanted to spare them. I, on the other hand, did know lack, did know shame, did know what it was like to be on the outskirts, despite my elite blood. I could start over. I could rebuild myself. They didn't have the calluses. They were too soft. They would not come out of this in one piece. There was only one answer to the problem: to save them from the life they were facing. It's happening now. I'm starting to feel it, like there's little bugs crawling in my veins. I can't lie still. I want milk. Sometimes she comes right away. Sometimes she makes me wait. I call out what usually gets her attention the fastest. Mommy, mommy, I need milk. I can't wait. I won't wait. I'll wail until she brings me the milk. I start to shiver. Mommy! There's nothing for a while. She often reminds me that she's gardening or tending to the house, and it takes a while to walk over to my nursery. Who knows what's true? Everything beyond this room is a mystery to me. It's just me and Mommy. No one is looking for me. Mommy told me I was on the news. It was a big deal when they found my wife and kids, and then weeks later when they found evidence of my suicide. Anyone who would have cared to look for me is either dead or thinks I'm fish food in the ocean after doing what I had to do to protect my family. I start to feel restless and kick my legs. Mommy knit me a thick onesie out of canvas for the winter. She locks the zipper so I can't get out of it. It covers my hands and feet so I don't scratch myself too much when I get impatient waiting for my next feeding.
Mama!
I kick and hit my face.
I want milk, Mama.
I hear the scratchy tones of the baby monitor kicking on. I writhe with glee as saliva floods my mouth.
It's baby time.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed Issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.